We are starting the Mystic Pete Chronicles. If you want to reach me, I'm at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. In today's show, I interview the very well-spoken Mahilani Akiyona. This is part one of the interview. Sacred sensuality for the modern woman. She's a coach and healer. Before and after, I play tracks by a group called Basiani, B-A-S-I-A-N-I. They're the state ensemble of Georgian folk singing. I know you'll enjoy these two beautiful tunes. Stay tuned.
Hallelujah.
It's October 11th, 2022.
You can call me Mahi for short.
Mahi. Hi, Mahi.
Like the fish.
So you have roots in the healing arts.
This I do.
Has some genetic or ancestral transmission.
Oh, yeah. This is epigenetics times 1,000. At least half of me is Hawaiian with a sprinkle of Chinese. And even that aspect of my background comes from, you know, families, lineages of healers. So yeah, it's like I was born, literally was born to do this. It just took me a while to figure it out because I wasn't doing that long time.
And then it became somehow covered or cloaked or a little bit lost in this normal 21st century.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just civilization is in a difficult place.
Yeah.
And that slams into children and people growing up, and things get buried, our intuition, our instincts.
1,000%.
We have to hide it sometimes just to survive.
Oh yeah. And I think that's a great word that I'll piggyback on is, and as a child, I feel like I was constantly hiding. I never, when I look back, gosh, I have so much like love and compassion for her and her bravery, because I was everything but myself. As a youngest child, I didn't recognize, like, oh, this is what I'm feeling and sensing and how I'm connecting to the world and these visions that I'm seeing, and whether they're in my past or in the future or they're in my dream state. To me, that, like, that was my world. But I never could say that out loud because my outer world was not reflecting that, you know? So I feel like early on I figured out, like, whoa, I didn't have the term supernatural or, like, freak or whatever, like, modern day terms would be considered towards, you know, someone who has psychic abilities or who's so, like, tuned in, or even if you demystify that, just comes from a sense of the healing arts, if you will. I consider being able to tune in as a form of, like, diagnosing the human condition, mind, body, spirit, and recognizing, like, oh my gosh, like, you're not okay. Like, why aren't you happy? Like, in the simplest things, like, as a child. So, you know, I realized that since the happiness train was not a constant around me, I learned to equate that as, like, okay, that's abnormal. So when I would find these states within myself, I was like, okay, I can't be joyous. I can't play. I can't act in this way because my environment isn't this way. And they look at me like I'm the weird one. So then I had to figure out how to act, to perform in a way that hid these really beautiful natural feelings like love, because then I was feeling these things like, oh my gosh, why are my family members feeling jealous of me? Why, like, I already as a child feeling these really dark energies like envy and who are you to feel like you can be creative and fun and have this aliveness to you? Because the world had already gotten on the hands of my parents and their parents. So they, as a child, I remember thinking, like, gosh, if you think I'm weird, I think you're weird. You're the robot. Like, I think you're the foreign entity here. And on that lens, I was like, oh my gosh, I feel like you now having the words, I'm like, oh my gosh, you, something has taken over you, this entity called the Matrix.
So let's just get into the healing community issue quickly, because
okay.
I'm a healer. I've been a healer for years and years. I've come up through the New Age and wellness communities. And this, honestly, some great information and wisdom coming through that channel. But at the same time, some prongs of it have seemed to get off into kind of white supremacy and a lot of conspiracy stuff and a lot of, like, kind of weird stuff now, like real right-wing extremist propaganda. And I see on your website, Be Love Coaching, BIPOC and LGBTQ plus allies,
sure.
Diversity and equity, inclusivity, belonging matter. I just love that. I love that you just put that there.
I did.
Like, there's got to be caring underneath it all. It can't be like, we're the best and they're the enemy. Like, what happened to our community?
Yeah, absolutely. And the way that I look at it is, it's, to me, it is really about saying, you know, I'm not just inviting you to the party. I'm asking you to plan it, to dance with me, help decorate. It's like hyper inclusive. And the belonging part is, you're, it's beyond just like the invite, you know, to the party. So I think when I think about when communities build around healing, whether it's, you know, there's this kind of lens of like white supremacy, there's just like a huge opportunity to demystify what might have created the white supremacy to begin with. And then how do we create environments where, you know, the healing world is accessible to those that that need it and may not have had exposure to it. And so this is the statement that I have on my website is really fundamental to a core value, and not just how I want to open the doors, right? I look into the work that I do. It's like, okay, my front door is open. But it's like, okay, I want to make sure, like, how do I give everyone the address? And then, you know, you've got the resources and tools to get there. And then you feel comfortable coming into my house and having a cup of tea with, like, also a diverse group of people, not just in kind of how you're showing up in your expression that day, but then also, like, what's your mindset? What's your intellectual capacity? You know, it's not just, you know, again, I think of just, like, color of skin or, you know, socioeconomic stuff. Like, I'm really trying to create a safe space for healing to be had, like, for all. And I feel like we've, unfortunately, at least from my own upbringing, is that I grew up with this. I grew up with racism.
You look like maybe a person of color or...
Yeah.
It's no way to tell.
It depends on the season.
Yeah, you could probably be anything you want, but you don't maybe look like, just for the radio listeners, a typical white person.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you had some negative attention.
Yeah, absolutely. And specifically, my mother, I mean, you know, she's got beautiful, dark brown skin, and we spent some time in Springfield, Missouri, which is, you know, predominantly white. And my uncle was living with us at the time, and his skin was so, so dark brown that you thought he was black. And, you know, I remember as a child being in these, in our neighborhood, and there was this, and even as I'm talking to you, like, my heart is just like closing up. Like, I could remember the time of what it was like as a child, feeling my mother and uncle, feeling the sense of like rejection just for being. And I'm like holding my breath, because that's how I could feel them, and I never understood like what it was.
Compassion for them.
Yes.
Because you could feel all the judgment from the
yes,
community.
Yes, I could feel them. I could feel, you know, I'm just like this big sponge like as a child, and I had no idea what it was. No idea.
You're already an empath.
Yeah. And I did.
Just in a natural childlike way.
Yeah, exactly. And I could, didn't have the words then, but I absolutely knew what shame felt like, you know? And even if I wasn't, you know, so many times I was like so overwhelmed by it, but I even remember, you know, seeing, you know, eyes lowered, walking, you know, these two family members walking like with, like almost like this. Their shoulders are shrunk. They
carrying
can't even
shame. Like they were.
Yeah, they're literally carrying.
They're tiptoeing around.
Yeah.
To be polite.
Yeah.
So they don't upset.
Yeah.
The white people.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and I know that was one of the big reasons why we, you know, ended up leaving at some, you know, shape or form. So it was so heavy, and I'm still feeling it as if it were yesterday.
And do you feel also attacks at you personally? People pick on you or make fun of you or anything like that?
You know, and so I know you were alluding to this. It's like, so you may can't tell kind of how you look. You know, in the winter, I looked white for sure. So it was like the ultimate chameleon. The only dead giveaway were my eyes. Or if I decided, you know, to have, you know, messy hair and the kinky curls would come out, then maybe you would draw, you know, some attention. You know, there, I definitely still stood out, even amongst like, you know, white friends or such, but I really didn't, I really understood that there was a difference come summer and I got really dark.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, really dark. And then that, I feel like that kind of Hawaiian would come out sometimes, you know, others thought that I was Hispanic, sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so
you actually felt
both sides. You're absolutely. Kind of white passing, whatever, and then you're ethnic for a while. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, so I think, you know, it's interesting, like in school, it was like, okay, like, depending on the season, it was like, I wondered if I was the cool girl or not. Like, I wonder if I was in the in crowd or not. And it would, you know, it's interesting.
Complicated.
Yeah, and so I used, this is another kind of interesting coping mechanism, is that to combat that, I use my intelligence. I'm like, okay, I might be sensing this kind of like outcastness, like you're the odd duck out in school. So what can I do? How can I play this game of people chess? And so that, you know, you will look beyond my change in season, in my color, or my hair as it adjusts, or whatnot. The eyes I can't hide. Gotcha. I mean,
and you became the smart girl.
1,000%.
Isn't that something? Okay.
Oh my God. And then I was like, okay, well, since I'm smart, like, and I get this works, like, where else can I be smart? I'm like, okay, gotcha. Then let me go lead you in some way. And then you can't, then I felt like I was almost, you know, I needed to lead to cultivate respect through intelligence, because I felt this like discomfort that I was naturally also harboring from what my mom and uncle were experiencing. So in a way, I was carrying their stuff with me at school, and I didn't know how to shake it except through intelligence, using my brain. Yeah,
it's a very, very generational issue here.
1,000%.
And it does transmit. But here, you've come full circle, and now we're very intentionally embracing this. And I want to point out, it's not just white supremacy, which is what's happening in the United States, but if you just go to any culture around the world, whatever the preferred or in charge or entitled people are, that's the supremacy going on.
Yeah.
And I have an Indian friend, Seema, who's very, she's been on my show, extremely dark-skinned Indian woman, and she said the racism in India is far more blatant and to your face than it is here. At least you might lose your job or something now if you're outwardly racist. But in India, she said people would spit on her. I mean, like, very direct hate because of her dark skin.
Yeah.
So this is actually a worldwide phenomenon. We think of it as a white thing, but every culture has it.
Oh, yeah. And I'm going to tack on to this, like a quick little, you know, tidbit to this, is that even going back home to Hawaii, a lot of what I was experiencing was, as I mentioned, in Springfield, didn't so much experience it in LA. But going back to Hawaii was an interesting phenomenon as well, is that even though I was very loved by my family there, I was considered hapa. And I'm half.
Oh, so you're on the other side of it from
her. Yes, that I'm on the other side. And I remember being teased. I was teased as they would say, like, oh, you're high maka maka, which means you're like basically like you're on your high horse because you're more or less white.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
So you're
I'm getting it both sides. Yeah.
Howley kind of.
Yeah, Howley, like. Totally. And when I think about why. Doing just some own research in my culture is that, gosh, this phenomena even within my own culture stems from, of course, you know, colonization and back in Hawaii and when the economy like sugar was, you know, basically we're cultivating the sweetness of Hawaii for money.
And the people were enslaved.
Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't just Hawaiians, it was Chinese, it was Japanese. And, you know, so there was just this like melting pot of
Filipinos.
Yeah, Philip, of course. And the plantation, the sugar plantation owners would naturally create competitiveness amongst interculturally to see who can work the hardest so that you keep your job. So they would intentionally create strife amongst one another. And so I feel like that, when I think about just the nature of like epigenetics, it's like, how does it get to me? You know, when I'm somewhat obviously distant from that, I did not experience that myself. Is I, you know, my grandfather's side of the family worked the plantation, and you know, they weren't treated very well. He had the Hawaiian Chinese in him, And so his environment taught him to be cruel. And what we know about epigenetics is that literally changes your, if you had sweetness in you, you're going to become a hard person. And that gets passed down lineage-wise, like DNA sequencing. So I'm like, oh.
Or just through behavior.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The way you're treating.
Yeah, your environment.
People.
Yeah. And so, and here I am at some aspects of how I'm seen as from my family, first to go to college, first to really make a living, and do well and not come from a place of financial scarcity. I don't really feel like I was looked down upon. I think there was this part of my family very much that was cheering me on, very proud of me. But then behind that was that this is the sneaky stuff with, racism.
Submerged
so deep in the subconscious. It's those small little moments when you have, cousins looking at the corner of your eye, like you are, like, who are you?
Wow.
And even though I felt very much like loved from them, but there was always something in it
that
was not unconditional. We're still judging. We're still, and so I could feel it, and I just, even as I got a little older, this wasn't just a symptom of under seven, this continued even up. Gosh, the last time I went, I believe was, I don't know, got to be like late in high school. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it still exists. And the terminology Hallie still gets flung around. So yeah, hasn't completely gone even now with my level of consciousness. And even though my family recognizes that I've done work in this space, it's still more natural conversation for
and
them.
You're even representing it
very
intentionally.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So Mahi, I'm very happy to have this conversation. I'm
likewise.
Very political and very social. I'm a healer in the mysticism and in the arts, but to me the flowering of spirituality really comes when society matures and becomes kinder, and I'm getting more and more reactive in a bad way to people who get very self-involved in the spiritual community, and it's all this posing thing and what I look like, and it's like crazy beliefs,
narcissism. So bad
and very entitled. So like I see my community branching in one direction into just this pretendy, like awful, it's like capitalism now, but just with Sage and Birkenstocks and alfalfa sprouts,
So you're saying they're authentic.
And then there's this other branch of people like really taking this inner information, this inner light.
Yeah.
And like seeing that you're part of a community, and the community has to resolve, and the community has to become more caring for this internal revelation to really take root. And so that's what you're talking about here, and it's very heartening to just to meet people who have the same kind. I think there are a lot of us, but I think there's a little bit more on the kind of posy, pretendy people thing.
Yeah.
It's just all about looking good or having a yoga body or like walking into a room with some kind of like, I'm better than everyone, I'm my guru, sandalwood stare. I'm just coming up with words right now.
I love it. Keep going, don't stop.
Let's talk about then how you found yourself to this revelation you've had in the last couple of years.
Sure.
And then we'll talk about what that is.
Yeah, and I, it's fascinating because I feel like I've been on my spiritual path for quite some time, but like finally knee deep into the spiritual world somewhat more recently. And the very things that you're describing very much happened in my corporate life. We're wearing, masks, we're pretending, we've been used to playing like all these identities that I think the bottom line is like, are we really ourselves? Are we really playing from our true, like authentic selves? And I feel like that's basically where what I was uncovering is remembering like who I was. Mm-hmm. And who I am.
So you were playing the corporate game. You're probably doing it very well. But it's all about status and income.
1,000%.
Okay.
And it's like, gosh, I don't know how many times I would be be out and quintessential, like, what do you do? And I was like, oh, just drive. Like, these, this conversation where, like, we need to understand, Mahi, whether or not I'm worthy of talking to you. You know, it's like that high horseness.
So entitled.
Yes, exactly. Back to your entitlement. And look, I was in that. I got seduced by that too. And, you know, I got, just as a product of my environment, you're around it like so long. But I will tell you, I think it got to a point where my soul was just like dying. Like, I can't handle one more conversation like this, where it's very surface level. We're not talking about what really matters. And that's what the ego wants. It doesn't want to talk about what really matters because it thrives off of sugar.
Nice metaphor.
Yes, absolutely. And if you just can't get enough of what you think is, you know, defining you, or what you think, or what you need to fill yourself up with. And I think so much of our world has been seduced by that power, greed, control, and then the manifestation of that in its physical realm. And you do that long enough, you think that's what you are. Mm-hmm. And that's not what you are. So I think, you know, for me, it took just for proverbial rock bottom and just being shaken to my core, when on top of the world getting quiet and the outside noise got me to a place of a place of stillness within me, where this voice I had just not heard for such a long time, it almost like freaked me out. I was like, oh my gosh, what is this voice? And of course, it's my higher self, it's my intuition. And I thought it was just like screaming for help. Like, what are you doing? Like, have you forgotten? And I thought, well, what do you mean? What have I forgotten? And it just these intimate moments with myself, meditation, questioning, a lot of self-inquiry, which we don't slow down enough. I think that's the other thing. Even if you do get to a place of stillness, it's, can you stay there long enough and start questioning things and being an inner detective? And that was that moment when the proverbial light bulb went off, and it was like all of a sudden I was feeling like Alice in Wonderland, where when Alice is, they're all trying to help her remember, like, but you don't know, like, this Alice, and then from like, how do you not remember like who you are and what you are? And so I just remember just like kind of replaying these different sequences of my life over time, at like patterns, old or behaviors that I had just been like automatically doing, that was getting me further from this like childlike love bubble that I am. And yeah, at that, and I didn't really know what to do. I just found myself on my hands and knees, literally in prayer. And people had considered me a spiritual, and I was spiritual. I think it was just the surface spiritual.
I see.
Yeah, even that was an identity that you were teasing about earlier, like the stage, right. the sage, the Birkenstocks. Right. I was even playing that identity.
You're putting on a show of it.
Yes.
As opposed to like a very simple, sweet, humble inner resonance.
Yeah.
That this is a feeling, which is all welcoming.
Like a gentleness.
And it's kind and
come
and play, and I don't need to be better than you. Like,
let's just play.
Let's dance. Right.
Yeah.
Everyone's well invited to the dance.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. And once I had just got to hearing, and I want to be clear here, not the thoughts, not these things that kind of rapid fire. It wasn't, this is that thing that's like deep, the soul. Like, look, when I think about, gosh, if you've done any work to where you've ever gone into your heart, this is like behind corridor 1000, behind the heart. And I thought, whoa, you know, like, there she is. It's there. She's been, you know, hiding.
I see.
You know, all this time. And at that point, I felt like the floodgates were, you know, just completely open in it was like, okay, like, let's hop on this canoe and go for this like wild ride, and let's just, you know, throw off the bowlines and go for it. Because I just thought, why not? Because whatever I've tuned into feels so much better. This feels amazing. And the times I could hold on to it for a good amount of time, and then it would just dissipate. So then it became, how do I get back to this place? And every time, and it took just cultivating a deeper spiritual practice. You know, meditation, I would start to intuitively like dance in my house. I rediscovered music. So my soul now was like leading. My heart was guiding me towards the things that the inner child in me really found joy. And the more that I did that, the more that I could be in this space longer, the more the floodgates would open. And all of a sudden I felt just very guided, very naturally, in terms of like, oh, this job that I have, I think it's time to leave it. You know, it wasn't even like, it was like so obvious to do it.
Yeah.
Where it wasn't obvious, you know, before.
The structure of where you were, it was starting to tear you down. Coming to work hurt.
Yeah.
It was corroding you.
Oh, yeah.
And you just had to say, I have to leave. I can't go this table anymore.
Oh, yeah. It was just a reenactment of childhood trauma that just transformed into adult trauma. And when I realized how much of a play it was, then I thought, oh my gosh, like I'm laughing because it's entertaining, but laughing also because it's sad.
Yeah.
And this is what I want for people, is to see how much of an illusion that they are living, and the necessity to come back to the real space within you, so that we can come back to a place where we are all just one. We don't even need, you know, unfortunately, it's like I look at these things that I have on my website, the BIPOC, LGBTQI, you know, IA2+, you know, now there's a two-spirit concept, right? And I thought, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous. It isn't going to turn into like supercalifragilistic. I can't wait for a day where we don't have any labels. Right?
We don't need to.
We don't need them.
It's just a part of how we are.
I don't even want to. I can't wait for a world where there is no such thing as like male and female. Like we literally are just an essence.
It's quite a vision.
Yeah. Where you know, for me, it's like, gosh, a world where we are in our joy, we're in our happiness, like we're learning and growing and evolving in a way that is nourishing, that's loving, that's kind, and that money doesn't exist. There's this thing called a vibrational bank account. Imagine if you were measured for your level of service to one another versus the structures.
Like morality.
Yeah, core values.
Was valued instead of just money and status.
Exactly. And so when you were talking about this crumbling of structures that wasn't feeling good, that's a representation, not just corporate America, but political, any systems or structures that are not allowing you to be this truest, authentic self of all these like lovely flowery words that I just described, I am hopeful that that's the part of the world that is, and we're already seeing it, that's diminishing. Yeah, and my work is centered around this. This is why I'm doing what I'm doing. I want the freedom that I gave to myself. I had to be the one to do it. No one's going to do it for you. This is what I want for everyone. And to me, it's super simple. This is the freedom of the world. This is the peace of the world, is you doing you, you getting it within you. That's it. It's that simple.
You left corporate life.
Yes.
And that led you to the work you're doing right now. So
absolutely.
Let's go into the nitty-gritty details.
Mm-hmm. Look, I mean, bottom line, I was molested and sexually assaulted as a child. That's some heavy stuff. Yes, here's the jaw dropper. Everyone like, yes. And that came out of my stillness. That came out of the voice deep inside, not just saying, hi, come save me, but hi, come heal me. Now that you're listening, I'm getting ready to drop the atomic bomb of your trauma, and I really need you to address it. It literally was like that literal. And of course, it took not just stillness. And I know some people, they get, you know, I just described all my revelations, but I did other healing modalities that helped unearth that. I mean, I, you know, was in the jungles of Tulum and in a more or less the equivalent of a sweat lodge, and really breaking down my body so I couldn't get into my thoughts, like really melting away kind of the structural damage, my trauma, all of my cultural conditioning, like so much of it was literally melting off my body. It was like then all these memories were popping up that had been stored in my body. And I thought, no way, this can't be. And
you're remembering the sexual assault.
Yes, I'm remembering the feelings, sensations, I'm remembering the fear. I remember very dark moments as a child, like literally being like in the corner of the room and seeing shadows like coming around, you know, my perpetrators that were in my own family, which is even more disgusting. But this comes from, yes, this comes from ancestral trauma. This has been happening time for time. Incest is not new to the Hawaiian culture either. So, you know, I hope whoever's hearing this story, right, that if you hear this, you're not alone. I very much realized as a child I was severely alone and didn't have anyone to talk to about this because this became the norm of my existence. So I learned how to...
And there was this probably a denial and a silence.
Oh, yeah.
Like, nobody wants to hear about this.
Right, and I tried, and no one was listening. Even when I tried to speak up. So my body got really desensitized, very numb, didn't want to speak the truth, because then what is the truth? Even when I say the truth, and isn't that not a problem of the world right now? We don't want to hear the truth. We're so afraid of the truth. Even when, and then you realize, depending on who is receiving your truth, they're so traumatized that they can't even hear it. You know, it's like, oh, this like, is 3D just trauma, just go, like just swimming in it. You know, there was no one. I had no one around me who was healthy enough to hear what I had to say, let alone know what to do.
A kid talking about somebody in their family sexually violating them.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's not deal with this. Yeah, that's the way we're going to deal with
it. Exactly. And it was not one family member. It was three. And it was 1,000%.
So your only option as a kid, you just have very little resources. You just had to turn off. You had shut down.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was no fighting. How could I? These are very big people in my family. They're men. You know, I'm in freeze, fawn mode where you kind of play as you go, you disassociate, and you get through it. You survive. You try to survive.
That's
right?
The only thing you can do. That's all the resources you have. What can you do?
Yeah, right.
There's nobody to go to. There's nobody to complain to.
Yeah, the body does what it does, and it's going to do its best to try to protect you.
Three men in the family.
Yeah.
Like, nobody wants to hear about that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. Oh, and then it got worse. And this is also, as I continued on my journey, as if that wouldn't already pee your pants, I learned about these discoveries, not all at once in my healing journey, as I was, you know, going through several healing modalities to rediscover my truth is, gosh, I was like, wow, it's another. And I'm like, oh my God. Right. I'm like going down to the depths of really excavating some really deep, dark stuff. And then I realized that, you know, there was gang activity in my family. And there was a moment where I remember when I was...
Like criminal gang activity?
Yeah.
Oh.
And I'll get to it. Is that I remember...
Things get more complicated.
Oh, yeah. As if that's not already, like... I'm brave listeners right now. really brave listeners right now if you're still tuning in. But then I remember as a child, I had these memories of me like being dressed up as a break dancer. And I remember as I got older, like I would tell people like how cool it was and my uncle's a DJ or whatnot. But lo and behold, that was my fantastical story for what was happening. Like, why was I dressed up as a break dancer? Why was I going out late at night with my uncles? It's because then I was being induced And then that's where I would be violated. And it turned into more gang activity, more than it was. It's just the sickness.
Jeez.
That exists. Yeah. So at a young age, I was given drugs. So then when I think about, like, whoa, when I was doing this ego parade, not just this corporate, you know, boss woman, you know, crushing her bottom line and hitting her KPIs. I mean, when I was having fun, I was doing all the drugs. I was swimming in being this, like, you know, I loved my alcohol. I loved my craft cocktails
of
partying. And it all ended up just becoming, like, pick your poison.
Wow.
And I would pick any one thing because this is what it was covering up. But
there's too much pain.
Oh, there was so much pain.
No, there's no resources.
Oh my gosh, no.
To deal with.
Yeah, and even as a child, my resources were ice cream, being spoiled, Disneyland. And I can't remember the concept for it from a psychological. You'd think I'd remember after going through all this therapy. But all this to say, it's like what was being covered up was then I was equating this icky behavior within this, like, it was being covered up with materialism as a child.
And sweets.
Sweets.
And that can
and
lead
attention.
And that can lead to eating disorders.
Oh, yeah. Totally. And so I was like, gosh, you know, why did I love some of those things going on? And of course, anyone in my professional life, I mean, I was a, you know, up as high up as a VP of HR. I would never let anyone know that that's what I was doing behind the scenes. And then as a result, you know, my energy, I had no boundaries. I was leaking my energy, especially sexually. And I had this, like, hyperactive, you know, sex drive and, you know, wasn't mindful or about who I was having sex with, why I was doing it, you know, or whatnot. And, you know, some of it was very, like, explorative. And when I think about the things I was exploring, I'm like, I don't know if I wouldn't do that now. But I really was in a place of just, like, this kind of loose cannon. And all it was just it was me reenacting, like,
Playing it out. Promiscuity.
Yeah, promiscuity. Absolutely. And I feel that what wasn't healed as a child was just remanifesting into adulthood. And there would be this reenactment of different, you know, people, roles, even professionally. I mean, I had a Me Too experience because of it. So yeah, maybe you're not my family. You just swapped a role, but the same things were acting out.
And then in the corporate world, unwanted sexual attention or violation. So that kept coming.
Yeah. And I remember, like, the same, you know, shame and kind of guilt. And is it me? You know, I really had kind of like, oh, is it me? I didn't even have that. Because I'm like, okay, this is seemingly, like, if these people are the people I'm supposed to love and trust, then it must be something wrong with me.
Yeah.
So when you would think, like, oh, a VP, at the time I was, like, the head of HR, but you would think, like, gosh, she's the person out there proclamating, you know, no harassment in the workplace and appropriate conduct.
But you're the person people go to.
I'm the person people go to, yet there was this deep, dark secret that I hadn't discovered of my childhood yet, but then I had this Me Too experience and I hid in shame every single day. And I remember even at the time, you know, no longer best friend, but I remember her saying to me, which just kept this, like, small thinking, my cage thinking, she said, well, Mahi, you brought it upon yourself. So it was like, even oof, that was
brutal.
It was like, oh, that part of me,
victim shame.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I bet you probably guaranteed someone in my childhood probably said that too. And I'm just reliving it through another role. Meaning now it's that concept is remanifesting in a best friend. And I remember sitting with that and being so angry and frustrated. I'm like, oh, wow, I'm going to sit with that. And then something about it really sat with me. Like, okay, that's familiar. So maybe it is me. so I'm not going to say anything. And God forbid, like, of course I'm not going to, because I need to keep up with this image of being this put together, with it girl who's making money, who's got a nice car, who, you know, lives in a great neighborhood in LA and gets to, you know, jet off and, you know, live her best life, travel the world and like all these things. And she has the dopest outfits and all the things. And I had been so attached to that, and I didn't want to give it up, that I kept the secret to myself, even though by all means, like, that it's a crime. But I pushed it away, just like the crimes that were committed against me when I was a child. Mm. Those synapses were not firing in my brain.
Yeah, yeah.
The freeze and the fawning continued.
It was so hard to put it together and get around it and find options. And, and from all this early severe damage, it was just hard to find a way out.
Yeah, and it's interesting we're talking about this. Like, it obviously just flowed. Had no plan on mentioning this. October is actually the anniversary of Me Too, when women started coming out in 2018. And the harsh reality of this is that women who are experiencing this likely have the same trauma. That's why this is manifested. So, of course, this is another, like, such a foundational aspect of my work, is that I'm re-educating women through the healing arts of sex to heal their trauma, so they're not having to do what I just did. I don't want them to live this way.
I get it.
Yeah, because this, you know, as if this at all really isn't bad enough, just the physical harm, you know, done to my own body, which needs healing, but the psychological, the emotional damage this is doing. And when you're not in a whole place, right, it's like, oh, no wonder I had this, like, douchey bad boy, you know, love affair going on. No wonder, like, then the next, you know, person after that is, you know, crossing my boundaries. And you come from this victim mentality.
So in general, how did it affect your romantic relationships?
Of course. I mean, I ended up meeting men in which I was trauma bonding. They too had similar trauma.
Abuse on the abusive side.
Yeah.
On the not respecting boundaries.
Yeah, exactly.
Pushing things too far. And getting turned on by the violation.
Exactly. And, you know, when I think about the common denominator, is that, you know, they not only were their childhood trauma that reared its head in several different ways beyond just sexual trauma. You know, parents who are emotionally unavailable, parents who are narcissists, parents who, you know, also were traumatized by the same things. It's like, this is the gift you don't want to keep on giving.
And it gets passed on. And no opportunity to speak.
Yeah,
your choice being taken away from you.
Exactly.
But through the generations, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is, there wasn't any aspect of my life that this trauma did not affect. It wasn't just romantic relationships. It was also in friendships. Mahi was Miss Popular. She knows everybody. She was the homecoming queen. She was the prom queen.
Oh, so you were
I was all of it.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that something?
To the T. Oh, yeah. It was grand. What a performance. Wow. I did well.
But in some way, it was trying to replace something else.
Yeah, I'm just trying to fill another void. Yeah, and it's like, I was not suffering just from romantic relationships, but then I was suffering even in, you know, friendships, and that they were very surface level. And again, like, I'm always have to remind myself that while there was so much darkness in my life, there were sparks of the good parts of me, you know. It's not like there's a spectrum to everything.
You had good times and a good life, and there's plenty of that.
Yeah, when I think about every category of, like, you know, life, like my fitness or, you know, my relationships or, you know, what's in the piggy bank or whatnot, it was a bell curve.
And not just unremitting misery. There was
Exactly. Yeah, there was everything like in between. I mean, I'm quite the concoction of, you know, I'm an interesting formula of things. So I feel and I test my my inner child who's like a total warrior to get through all this. What little light that she could hold on to, she still tried to shine as best as possible. And that little bit of light has always, interestingly enough, I now look at it as it's always been the strongest, even if it was just like a drop in the proverbial ocean, because that's the very light that got me to get out of all of this and transform, like, the proverbial like lotus from the mud. Because now I'm grateful to all of it. That you have a woman here that is does not play victim. I cannot. I even now I think, gosh, I can't believe I'm grateful for this.
Oh.
We're coming to the end of the Mystic Pete Chronicles. You can reach me at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. At the beginning and end, I played beautiful tunes from Bassiani, the state ensemble of Georgian folk singers. In today's show, I interviewed the very well-spoken Mahilani Akiona. This is part one of the interview. Sacred Sensuality for the Modern Woman. She's a coach and healer. MahilaniAkiona.com. We'll be back next week with the best of talk radio. Mystic Pete out.